wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
We are still in separate studios, not because of coronavirus, but because this way, if someone attempts to overthrow the pod, one of us will survive.
Oh, yeah, I'm wearing my horned hat and furs right now. So
wild and wacky stuff, isn't that? That's a very bad Johnny Carson impression. I'm sure we will talk more about just the surreality of it all when we do our Trump predictions wrap-up show later on, because we actually do have to do that at some moment, because that is, right now, that is the only competition. That's the only competition we've got going, because the summer movie preview has been a bit of a bust from a competitive aspect.
Yeah. We'll figure something out for that one. We'll have to check it out.
Yeah. But anyway, this is our annual New Year's resolution shows. We are going to update ourselves on our status of our resolutions last year and then set our resolutions for this upcoming year. One of the traditions of the show. But as always, we have some deaths.
It's always, yes, there always are deaths.
Yeah. We were going to go with, but the big one that we're that's going to lead to most of the conversation is Jerry Marsden of the British invasion band of the 60s, Jerry and the Pacemakers, passed away this week. But also just the other day before recording, a movie director passed away, an English guy called Michael Apted. And I've just thought, he's always had this really interesting career in that he's done, you know, he's done some highly commercial work, including the James Bond movie, The World Is Not Enough, and a couple of Extreme Measures.
It's all about Bond with you, huh?
Yes. Extreme Measures, which I think was a Hugh Grant medical thriller. Also, The Chronicles of Narnia, The Voyage of the Dawn Treader. But here's a film that one of his early films, and I'm going to say this, I think it's one of the greatest music biographies ever done. He's famous for doing Coal Miner's Daughter, which is the Sissy Spacek and Tommy Lee Jones, the real life story of Loretta Lynn. And I'm not a fan of country music at any which way. And I remember when I saw that movie for the first time, I knew nothing. I saw that movie when I was still living in England. I know nothing about country music and the Grand Ole Opry. I wouldn't know Loretta Lynn if she dropped on me. But watching that film, it's just a really well done. I think it won. I don't know if the film won an Oscar, but Sissy Spacek won an Oscar, and Tommy Lee Jones. Yeah, I mean, it was a huge film. But I also wanted to give him a quick shout out because he did something that is still regarded within the world of sort of cinema and documentary cinema. He created something called the Up series. And what it did was it profiled, it was a documentary, every 7 years. They'd originally picked 14 seven-year-olds, and every 7 years, he circled back and did a documentary of their lives. And he kept that going up until, you know, 8 or 9 years ago. The first one was called 7 Up, then it was 14 Up, you know, and so on in groups of seven.
Oh, all right.
And I just think that's
interesting. I've seen the 7 Up thing, and I was always confused, why is it up? But it's 7 Up, so each one was different.
But I just thought, I remember a couple of years ago, I think you saw this movie and I didn't. Is it Boyhood, the Richard Linklater movie?
I think that's what it is, where they took, I mean, it's a fictional, obviously, story, but they used the actors repeatedly with big gaps in their life. I think it covered about 20 years because it was kid being born to being a young adult.
That's right. And they used the same sort of actors and stuff. And everyone made a big hoo-ha about how this was sort of, you know, never been done before and groundbreaking. And I always felt that was just a little bit of a scam. Because
didn't the 7-Up or this Up series, didn't they lose a few people along the way? Like they wouldn't participate anymore? That's the thing with the
actors. They died, probably.
Well, but I mean, even before that, I think the movie Linklater did was, you know, you had to get these actors, and especially the kid, you get this kid that, are they going to actually be a good actor, you know, 14 years down the road or whatever number of the years.
And to be fair, this was slightly different. It's a documentary.
Rather than
fiction. The most recent installment was 63 Up, which occurred 2 years ago. So, I mean, they stuck at this thing for 48, 49 years. And according to the Wikipedia entry for Michael Apted, it said that the series won a Peabody Award in 2012, in quotes, for its creators' patience and its subjects humanity. And I would also think for its subjects patience as well, but it didn't say that in the quote.
Is that available on any of our streaming services? Actually, it looks like it's on Prime Video, but I don't know if you have to pay for it.
I'm not going to lie. I have never seen... It's never been of interest to me, and so I've never watched any of it. But I think my mom, bless her, has watched it, and she says it is fascinating. But you have to buy into the whole thing, and it is quite... I mean...
It looks like you have to get BritBox on Amazon.
Oh, you do?
Have that, yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, I don't do... Because that's... So you're paying within paying.
Right.
Oh, forget all of that. You're double billing me. So anyway, Michael Apted passed away, but also obviously Jerry and the Pacemakers passed
away. I was going to tell everybody, you know, under age 45.
Oops, sorry.
That's not Jerry and the Pacemakers.
No, that's someone else. I have all kinds of stuff queued up here. And now that I do the technology, I appreciate with you how difficult it is fiddling around with YouTube with adverts and stuff rolling. And so I have great...
Well, anyway, I was going to say, while you're pulling it up, I was going to say that we are easily the youngest people who would like have any clue who Jerry and the Pacemakers were, I think.
Yes.
In terms of that was already distant for us.
Yep. Yep.
So I was about to tell everybody under age 45 to, you know, hang in there. But then you start going with 7 Up and I was like, we're doomed. You know, like, no, who's listening to this thing under 45?
Well, but remember, as I said to you when we discussed the show in the green room. We are going to have it's all a tangential discussion about the British invasion, which was the official phrase for all these pop bands that were big on both sides of the Atlantic in the 60s. And again, yeah, I appreciate that if you are younger than us, you're like, who are these guys? What the heck are these guys talking about? But when I name some of the bands that are ultimately British invasion bands, I think many generations will go, oh, wow. These two are not talking about some eclectic music from 1917 or something like that. That's my defense.
Sure.
So anyway, do you want to start while I fiddle around with tunes, or do you want me to pull up a tune? And
well, listen, I mean, it's getting not too wide range. You got to at least start with Jerry and the Pacemakers because, you know, when they started out around the same time as the Beatles, they were considered maybe potentially likely to be more successful than the Beatles.
Yeah, and here's a fair thing. They are from the same city as mm-hmm. as the Beatles, Liverpool, which is in the northwest of England. And I'm not from Liverpool. I'm from London, which is a couple of hours, you know, 3 hours to the south. I'm going to give a quick shout out to two of our fans. I want to shout out to Richie. Who lives here in America, who is the coach of the Washington Spirit, the women's soccer team, and another friend of mine called Cab. They are both in their regular lives, in their normal lives, they are fans of Liverpool Football Club. And I they're both from up there. And okay. I'm wondering maybe they can text me or email me and let me know after the show. In terms of being from Liverpool, I'm almost going to say that like Jerry and the Pacemakers have a far more different, I don't know, have a much closer relationship with the city of Liverpool than, say, the Beatles. And what I mean by that is everyone in England likes to sort of feel that they own a bit of the Beatles. Do you know what I mean? But Jerry and the Pacemakers were from Liverpool. And I know I'm not being clear when I'm saying what I'm saying here, but they are very much of that place. And as we do talk about them, I'll demonstrate why I think that they really are. They are more identified with Liverpool than the Beatles, who frankly went on to do greater things. And maybe to a large extent, people perhaps might have forgotten where they came from. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. No, I think it gets washed out over time because they had a longer time period and were so big that you didn't really get into the specifics there.
But as my partner touched upon, for a while it looked like Jerry and the Pacemakers were going to be bigger than the Beatles. Their first four singles all reached number one in the British charts, which I know the charts have always been bigger in England than they are here, but that is a heck of a feat. And you told, and that was not something done by the Beatles, and in fact it wasn't done again until...
Yeah, well, it's funny. It's the thing in the Post talked about the first three, and I hope we're going to hear some of these songs.
Yeah, I've got them queued up. But, I'm waiting.
But the next group to top the charts with its first three singles was Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
Also from up there.
Liverpool. And and also had one of the famous songs that's not really their song, Jerry and the Pacemakers, on a B-side of one of their items. But I when we were talking beforehand, I thought, you know, they make it out like a big deal hitting three singles. And, you know, getting three singles at the beginning, not hitting three singles like in a baseball sense. But if Frankie Goes to Hollywood can do it, maybe it's not so impressive.
Hey, when you said to me the feat wasn't repeated until and I yelled out the Spice Girls, I was surprised to discover that the Spice Girls had been beaten by Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Mm-hmm. All right, let me cue up some Ferry Across the Mersey. And before I play it, and again, to the point I made earlier about the relationship between this band and the city of Liverpool, obviously this song is about the ferry that crosses the River Mersey, which Liverpool sits on.
Life goes on day after day. Hearts torn in every way. So ferry across the Mersey, 'cause this land's the place I love, and here I'll stay.
So I'll let that play as we talk, but I mean...
So the one thing about, like, when did that song come in their life, their cycle?
I think that was their...
I think it's... Don't you think it's a little later? Because I think, I mean, one of the big things about, like, the early trajectory... You don't have any of the first couple of songs that came big queued up, do you? Because
no,
the one we haven't gotten to yet, which is Big Face, is a very... ballad, like, listen, there's all these strings in that production there, which does not strike me as a competitor to the Beatles, and I just wonder if they had already transitioned a little bit away because of their big success with the other song.
I'm trying to look here. I think Ferry Across the Mersey was when I'm desperately trying to look through there. I mean, that Ferry Across the Mersey was a hit in I think 65. And yet they'd had a whole load of songs before that, a couple of albums before including Don't Let the Sun Catch You Crying, but to be fair, though, I only know a couple of their songs, and that's one of them. And so that's one of the first ones that got shouted out in sort of the obituaries this week. And I will say this, because I actually think, in my opinion of the music of the era, when you hear that song... Yeah, you're right. It's got strings and everything in it. But to me, it screams 60s pop music. At least British 60s pop music.
But it's whereas pop, Beatles, maybe, but not rock. I mean, like, you know, like...
But Beatles, no, but which... that's what I'm saying. That I do think, and it's weird, that, you know, I've mentioned the British invasion, and we will speak more about that in the next couple of minutes. That this is unabashed pop music.
Could you hear that when I just was playing that?
No, I couldn't hear anything.
Okay, all right. It just only plays into my ears then.
So
their first single, I was just playing it to myself. I don't know how you do it to me. It was much more like a Beatles sounding song.
Yeah.
Which was their first single.
Well, we're going to play, I want to talk a bit more about Jerry and Pacemakers in a minute, but like I say, when he passed away, I thought, ooh, let me look at list of, I went to Wikipedia and looked at the list of British invasion artists, and the Wikipedia entry talks of their list this way. The following is a list of bands and artists that were involved with the British invasion music phenomenon that occurred between 64 and 66 in the United States. And then it has artists shown in boldface are rock and roll Hall of Fame inductees. I'm looking at this list, and it is, on the guess, 60 to 70 bands long. In just a 2-year period, that's how many, you know, just from Britain, sort of pop bands were releasing acts. And I remember when I first looked at the list, and I will read some of the names in a moment. I don't think right now, in this era... there's not really 60 pop bands. At best, there's about 20 artists who claim to whose self-worth is the wrong word, but whose sort of value is around pop music. And I know that music is more splintered now than it was before in terms of its genre, but do you know what I'm saying?
No, I don't. Okay. It doesn't make any sense to me. There's a ton of bands out there.
Yeah, but okay, so I'm going to just list some of the other bands, and I'm sure there are some people would have had it. The Animals, the Beatles. Here's a duo, Chad and Jeremy. I've never heard of them until I saw this.
Right, well, where is this list from again?
It's from Wikipedia. The Spencer Davis Group.
This doesn't mean anything. This just means a bunch of bands that started then.
But they all had hits in America. Hermits.
Well, Hermits did, but
Spencer Davis Group. That's Stevie Winwood.
In America, there's enough room for 70 bands to have hits.
Tom Jones counts as a British invasion artist.
Oh, well, see, I mean,
someone called the Ivy League, the Kinks. So now this is an interesting thing about the point I'm going to make when it's the Moody Blues, Manfred Mann, Lulu, the Rolling
Stones. And the Rare Earth Band, or just without Rare Earth?
I don't know. The Rolling Stones, the Small Faces, Dusty Springfield, The Who, the Yardbirds, the Zombies, all kinds of other bands. I have a couple of others. I've always been partial to the Dave Clark Five myself. Let me play this before I make my point.
I remember my parents had some Dave Clark Five albums around.
They all their songs. Here we go. I think this is my favorite one. And as I mess around with YouTube, I'm desperately killing time to wait for the music to queue up on YouTube.
Well, did you Who's this?
I'm getting into this.
Who is it? Would you mute me?
This is the date. No. Can you not hear that?
No, I can hear it, but you couldn't hear me. I'm trying to talk to you.
Oh.
The podcast. It's not a radio show.
Sorry. That's the Dave Clark Five and Bits and Pieces. That's a notable band because Dave Clark was the drummer, and yet he was the headline artist.
One of the things that the Obit led me to was talking about Skiffle, which was a sort of precursor to the rock thing in Britain. And so like the Obit in the Washington Post talks about how they had previously formed a skiffle band, and so had the Beatles had a skiffle band beforehand and on the way up. And the skiffle was sort of a more of a folky rock type of thing that came. And Billy Bragg of what's Billy Bragg's big band? I forget, but did the punk stuff. And
Billy Bragg, isn't he?
Yeah, well, but
I never think of Billy Bragg. If Billy Bragg had a band, I don't care about them.
Okay.
I can't say I'm a huge Billy Bragg fan, full stop.
He did a documentary about Skiffle, and he makes the case that, like, really, the Skiffle era really opened up rock and roll and could be considered a major creator of what we consider modern rock and roll. I wish I had a Skiffle song handy or you were able to hear it, but like it mentions that Marsden's first band, the Skiffle Band, used a washboard as rhythm and his brother using a tin of Quality Street chocolates as a percussion because they couldn't afford a drum kit.
That's
when I listened to that Dave Clark Five thing, when you listen to the rattling sort of thing, is not really, it's a little rough and more acoustic guitar sounding than electric guitar.
Yeah.
Anyway, we could talk about Skiffle some other podcast. I'm sure everybody wants to hear us talk about Skiffle.
Yes, quite. But again, I do think, to my point about these British invasion bands, I do think both Jerry and the Pacemakers, and I've just played the Dave Clark Five, it is more overt pop music than, say, arguably the Rolling Stones, most definitely the Who, and I would say the Kinks, who I would think if you pushed them into a corner...
But it's on a par for that era. That's on a par with the Beatles.
Oh yeah,
like that's yeah. I mean, like so. It's you know, it was the Stones were immediately darker, and the Who were a different kind of sound. They were more the mods thing.
I mean, the Beatles are. I'm not having a go at the Beatles, but I think it's fair to. If I made the statement that the Beatles were a pop act that evolved, I'd like someone to challenge me on that statement, whereas I think the Who. While they were more than happy to make money, I think, and you mentioned the Rolling Stones, I'm sure they, and I would imagine the Animals, is that Eric Burdon's band? They would far more self-identify as rock bands than pop bands. Because I always think that even in the 60s, starting in the 60s, I've always felt that there was, maybe there's something that I, you know, that I sort of project onto all of this. I do think there's a notion of snobbery between being a rock band and a pop band. Pop bands are more produced. That's the public perception.
Pop bands are, there's lots of weird prog rock things that are heavily produced, but I think the thing is they have more simplified rhythms and hooks and things like that, and they're designed to get a large number of people, the population, singing along to their songs. Speaking of large portions of population singing along the songs, we've been dodging around like the main Jerry Marsden claimed, well, I don't know, like longest lasting effect.
Let me play it.
When you walk through a storm, hold your head up high and don't be afraid of the dark. At the end of a storm, there's a goal.
We'll let it get to the chorus and then we can talk,
And the sweet silver song of love. Walk on through the wind.
Alone, and this I didn't know until Jerry of the Pacemakers died. Originally a Rodgers and Hammerstein song.
I'll flip you. I'll go to the flip side here. I never realized it was a Jerry and the Pacemakers song was the Liverpool connection. I knew it was a Rodgers and Hammerstein song from the play. I didn't know it was from the play. I knew it was Rodgers and Hammerstein, but it was from the play Carousel from 1945. And so it always struck me as, okay, so like the big thing here is this is like Liverpool, the soccer club, football club. It's their anthem and it's what they all sing. You know, in fact,
I'm going to give you some.
Isn't it in the Pink Floyd song? Don't they use it in that Pink Floyd song where they have like a cheer in the background?
I don't know.
I'll have to find it while we're talking here, but in any event, so it's, you know, a big anthem. People hear it, you know, like you hear a whole stadium singing that. It sounds pretty interesting. And I always thought, how did they end up with a Rodgers and Hammerstein song as their song? And so obviously now I know in retrospect, the hook was that Jerry and the Pacemakers from Liverpool promoted that song. It was like their third big hit. And the obit even talks about the fact that, you know, Jerry and the Pacemakers was Jerry's band and the Pacemakers, and he decided to do that song, and they were all, the band itself was apparently surprised. What are we doing this thing? That's what made me think of the strings and stuff was maybe after the success of that, you know how a band, like, it gets a big song and then the songs start like sounding like that song that was the big hit.
Right.
Did they after that start doing, well, we'll do more ballads with strings and stuff, and they kind of move away from being
well, so I want to give you a bit of a history about a bit of cultural history as I understand it, is that prior to the 60s, soccer supporters who stood on large banks of concrete of 10,000-15,000 people, you'd go to the game, you'd clap and cheer, there was this wooden device called a rattle, which you span and it made a rattling noise.
It's this thing you spin around. It has a little flipping on the thing, and it kind of buzzes as you turn around.
Yeah. And then, thanks to the British invasion, fans of different teams would sing pop songs, and they would change the lyrics and put in like, you know, things about their favorite player. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so, especially in the 60s, when pop music was this new, vibrant thing, you know, again, we just talked about all these bands, the charts meant something. So, you know, it was, I think my sense of it is, is Liverpool fans co-opted this song, and then it became sort of the club's official anthem. So when we talked about it as the club's anthem, it wasn't like the football club said, oh, we are going to adopt Jerry and Pacemaker's song as our official anthem. No, the cop, which is the one end where the hardiest Liverpool fans stand, you know, way back in the 60s, they would sing this song at the end of games. It was almost like it would, when you hear 15,000 people chant it, in where they're beating the pulp out of you and they chant it, it's actually quite a moving experience.
Yeah, right. And so I think I figured out a way to get people to hear the part I was talking about, because I'm about to share my screen with you, and I think I can share the audio too. So
right,
bear with me a second here. Let's see if this works. If it doesn't, you can cut out this stuff. Am I sharing a screen with you?
Yes, you are.
Okay. And it says I was. Can you hear that?
Yes, I can. No, now you turned down. Leave it up.
I don't think I changed it. I think it's just a little lull in the song. So this is Pink Floyd's song Fearless. I forget what album it's from, but I'm going to... I need to get to a part. Where they do...
Well, you find it. Do you want me to backfill about You'll Never Walk Alone? Or are you ready?
Wait a minute. It'll be here in a second.
If people aren't thinking of marching on the pod, they will now. Yep. Yeah, that's a live. That's a recording of the fans singing it.
Yeah. So they just the song Fearless phases into that. So
I mean, to be fair, when I was growing up, obviously I'm an Arsenal fan, and I'm from London, which is 3 hours away, and very different set of cultural influences. We all love bands like The Who and The Rolling Stones because they were from down our end. I think it's fair to say that, you know, the mod culture came out of London in the swinging 60s, whereas British Invasion pop, I think it's fair to say that many of those bands started in Liverpool. That being said,
Mercy Beat, right?
The Mercy Beat, exactly. You know, when I was a kid going to Arsenal games, football fans everywhere had co-opted that song to sing at the end of games.
When you search it, it basically seems to say, like, okay, we're going to list out the number of bands that have done this. It's like everybody starts stealing that thing where the German club where everybody stood around and stands backwards and bounces around. And stuff.
Yeah, that well, one. That's
they,
the
they do that thing
I forgot
where they
what
stand
it's called.
And they bounce up and down, so it looks like a funny looking wall.
It's called the something, and I forgot what it is now. But you know, everyone sung it. But ultimately, it is Liverpool FC's song, and their fans still sing it now before games and probably after games, especially now when they're beating the pulp out of you. Again, shout out to friends of the pod, Richie and Cab. But anyway,
this was been more fun a couple of years ago because we could have made fun of them for still being bad.
Yes.
But now they're not.
But again, it is interesting. There is this sort of intersection, and I think it exists now, frankly. It exists now, you know, at a different point of time between basketball and rap music. So if you think of that now, do you know what I mean? There is an intersection between you know, basketball sub fan culture and top rap acts. I think, culturally, but
there's not like the singing thing is gone.
No, but what I mean
every
is
every place you go to see a. They just have play PA music the whole time
and change it every 13 seconds. But what I mean is, you know, the soccer fan culture in the United Kingdom is very much tied to popular music of the time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, and I imagine, you know, part of, like, obviously they've been playing, actually we were going to mention this, they've been playing soccer and England forever, but you know, when it emerged as a TV phenomenon and or you know, people were paying more attention, would have been the same time as the pop thing was coming out. I had asked you before I stumbled into Ken Burns baseball documentary. They've been running episodes on the Major League Baseball Network. Annoyingly, they don't run them off enough for me to record them and catch them. But the first episode of it is called The Game, and they talk about the very earliest days of being invented and like it's tied to rounders and how they denied the tied to rounders, how they went on a world tour and the English people, you know, like they literally played baseball in the 1880s in front of the Sphinx, you know, and the pyramids and gone all these places, and they went to England. And it was pretty interesting. I got to find the episode and watch it again from scratch because they talk about the different parts of the U.S. culture that kind of embraced it. But I was asking whether anybody had ever done a documentary like that sort of covered soccer as a cultural phenomenon just in Great Britain, let alone, you know, it's in the world, but like just the Great Britain phenomenon. And it sounds like, to your knowledge, no.
When you asked me that, my immediate reaction was there's been loads of documentaries. We talked about one a couple of episodes ago about Diego Maradona's time in Napoli. There have been loads of
that's I'm thinking a historical.
Yes, that's why I said my point is soccer is full of outstanding documentaries about events or teams or clubs or moments in time. But I think the point I'd made to you was no one has ever gone back and done very much, you know, sort of the sister project like Ken Burns' baseball, which is the history of the game. And I would imagine that, frankly, it would probably last for about, you know, 15 days, such as it would have to be. I do want to shout out one book that I read when I was a kid that was fascinating. And if anyone ever gets a chance to read it, it is an amazing.
You think it'd be hard for them to get a chance to read it? Like are they going to have to? Or do you?
I don't know.
Is that a print?
I don't know. I'm looking now. So there was a what do you call these dudes? A human sociologist type professor guys was a dude called Desmond Morris, back in England. He was born in 1928. He was, you know, he'd done all kinds of studies about animal behavior and human behavior and all types of things. Anyway, in the early 80s, he released a book called The Soccer Tribe. And it is he went and studied soccer fan culture. So some of the things that even I've been talking about now about the singing and everything were first found in that book. And one of his big things was, you and I have discussed before about why we support certain teams. And he did a huge study into, you know, the relationship between geography and supporting a team's success, and why you support the team. And anyway, it's this fascinating just sort of behavioral study of being a fan. And he tries to point out that there's always these sort of subconscious forces that sort of go into you, you know, in the act of supporting. And I'm not explaining it very well, but obviously, because it was, because it came out in the 80s, there is a whole section on why, you know, the support of violence, which was rampant at that time and still occurs now on occasion. He also tied all those sort of things into, you know, why people behave a certain way and all this kind of stuff. Anyway, if you want to, while there has never been a documentary about the history of soccer, if you ever get a chance to flip through this book, it's fascinating.
All right.
Really good book by Desmond Morris called The Soccer Tribe.
The Soccer Tribe,
right? Soccer Tribe, yes. So anyway, that was Jerry and the Pacemakers, and wow, what a whole half the show has disappeared.
Yeah.
If you want to listen to anybody, are you ready for the segue? I'm going to give you the segue. If you want to listen to any of these British Invasion tunes, I'm sure you can find them on Spotify.
There you go. So, well, do you want to make the announcement?
Well, I'm going to make an announcement.
Your family member who keyed it in.
So, obviously, long-time listeners of the show, I've said since the summer that our listenership has been climbing. But so far this month, we've already had nearly 1,000 listens, and we haven't even done a show this month. So there are more people out there listening to our show than ever before. So anyway,
Pressure. I'm going to have to prepare more.
Look, people know what they're getting when they sign. I mean,
they don't have as many followers as my cats, who are now at 5,600 Instagram followers.
I mean, I was about to say, if you're Joe Rogan, you're probably more worried about your cats than they are our show. But my stepdaughter was like, hey, are you guys on Spotify? And I'm like, well, I think so, because I thought we were. So then she's fiddling around her computer, and she goes, no, you're not. And then she says, let me get you on Spotify. And within 20 minutes, We are now up on Spotify, and I looked. She got us up, I think, Wednesday night. We've already had 100 people listen to us on Spotify.
Yeah, well, you know, never I don't know why that is. That is something crawling and like kind of like collecting stuff. So we had, I mean, if you had asked me, I would have now tell you we weren't on there. A number of years ago, we had talked about it, and I had looked into it. And at that time, it required a decent amount of submission of like to prove you were legitimate and you weren't just, you know,
yeah,
I don't know, making in your new basement studios by the lake, but that you had some. Interestingly enough, Apple was easier to do. You know, we had like 4 or 5 episodes in the can, and you'd show Apple and they'd put you on there basically.
And it did take a while with Apple. It takes 24 to 48 hours to get approved with Apple.
Right.
With Spotify, so, was less than 6.
Right. So, but what I think probably happened in the interim is Spotify has, and this is the part I mentioned I can tell you about,
right,
has made a play on podcasts. They've made a huge bet on podcasts. They're spending more. They want to be the podcast source. They bought, you know, the Ringer net. They brought the Ringer website, the Bill Simmons website, really for the podcasts.
Yeah. And there's loads of them.
They could grab all those podcasts and put them in there. Now, what I don't know is, and Joe Rogan is on there. Like,
he's on Spotify. And
I don't know if that makes them exclusive. I mean, the thing that's a little bit weird is, you know, the fact that anybody can do a podcast, and it's not like we're doing it through Spotify.
No, Spotify.
I have a feeling you could listen to even the bigger, more popular ones, Joe Rogan and things like that, without having to use Spotify.
Yeah, it's you just can. You listen Spotify on their original server.
Right. Yeah. Spotify just is designed to be someplace where it's all there, and you go to the app and you can just like you can listen to the music, you can grab the podcast. And so, you know, it was like a year and a half ago when suddenly they made this big move. And then, you know, I was pulling up some articles literally just before we got on here, you know, where they're, you know, they were making they spend like this article's from The Verge from early 2019, so a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago, and you know, that's when they announced they were going to spend $500 million on podcasting, trying to go for exclusive content. I do think some of the Ringer stuff is now only available through Spotify. But in any event, you know, here's a company that's losing money. You know, Spotify has never made money. It's obviously got a huge share of the music business, but it doesn't make money yet because it's busy spending more than it makes. But they've been rolling this stuff out. I don't know.
Interrupt me for a moment. Because I do want to jump on that moment. So how do they make revenue?
Well, so this is the question, right?
Because I don't have Spotify.
Had I spent more than 15 minutes trying to research this, it's ad revenue, right? And like, okay. So, you know, podcast, it makes some sense that basically if they figured, okay, there's a certain amount of advertising on podcasts. Who knows how much money it makes? You do get accurate counts of how many people are listening, you know, right? Yep. Like, so it's not like doing it just in a void. So you can tell how much is there. But if you can corner the market, like if you figure, listen, a small podcast may not get enough listeners by itself to do an ad. But if I can bundle that up with 500 different podcasts that all have a smaller amount and have somebody buy an ad that appears in all of them, you know, then I can sell those ads for a good amount of money because people say, well, they're going to listen to it. What I don't know is, do they place ads? Like, you know, your sister, your daughter-in-law, not daughter-in-law, sorry, stepdaughter. I don't know if she counts as legal counsel, but she clicked through some things and put us on there. I don't know if we basically signed away like all the advertising revenue or something like that. I'm not aware of us getting a share since she did this a week ago.
I don't know. I'm going to have to look into that. I was just excited. Yeah. Hey, we're going to be on Spotify.
Yeah, the main thing is I could pull it up on Roku.
Joe Rogan, here we come.
You can pull it up on a lot of apps because like now, not only you can get it on your phone, but you can get it on your TV. You can get it, like, you know, Spotify appears a lot of different places and a lot of smart TVs have a Spotify app. And so anybody who is, I mean, it doesn't help if I'm telling you this, if you're listening, you've already figured out how to listen to it. But really for a lot of friends of ours and people, you know, we know they may not have wanted to bother with the exercise. They may not be Apple people, but you know, we let them know that we're on Spotify. That may kick off some more listening.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting thing. I mean, I don't want to be a snob about all of this. And I don't want to be like an elitist. But I
don't want you to be either, because you won't be able to be.
Okay, but you and I, I'm going to say this, we're first wave podcasters.
Yes, no, this is true.
So if you're out there now,
from listening to us, but what is this, 7 years now?
8 years. If you're out there now and you're going, oh, I'm thinking me and my buddy are going to do a podcast. Yeah, go for it. But me and my buddy, we've been doing, we're first generation podcasters. Mm-hmm. So, and while I'm getting a bit fired up when I say that now, you know, I think we had our podcast before Joe Rogan, frankly. Probably.
Yeah. I know we had it before. We had it before all the Bill Simmons stuff.
Oh yeah, we beat him. He spent his career standing on our shoulders. So, I forgot my point now. I'm getting all fired up. When we first got into podcasting, obviously there were two ways to get your podcast out there: on your own blog and on Apple, and that was it. So we were first in with Apple, and when you were on Apple, once you arrived on Apple, I definitely felt like at some level there was this notion of, you know, the establishment has signed off on you as a podcaster and bestowed upon you legitimacy. And all Spotify is the same thing, you know, all these years later. But the reality is to your point with Spotify, you still, there's still no shortcut. What I mean is, everything we do to make and host and put out a podcast, and we're paying a couple of different people, you know, rental fees and annual licenses and all kinds of stuff, there's no shortcut to that. So if you're sitting at home thinking, yeah, I'll do a podcast, well, you know, get ready to get your credit card out, because you do have to pay for a couple of different things in order to get it out there. So while Spotify's presence has as a deliverer of podcast content, they're now getting into that business. What they're not doing is making it any cheaper or easier for you to put a podcast out there. You still have to go through all these other steps.
Right. They're not doing the production piece. What I don't like, one of the things you asked me is, like, you know, getting Spotify, you say you're not signed up for it, but you don't have to pay to have Spotify.
I thought you did.
You have to pay for their premium.
Why do you think
plans?
My stepdaughter got to show up? Because I don't know any of this stuff.
Yeah, well, we know you have holes in your information knowledge when it comes to you may be running the technology, but you don't really run all the technology.
The technology runs me.
What it used to be, at least, was you could listen on your computer all you wanted. Because think about it, from the music perspective, the big difference is that you control, as opposed to like Pandora or something like that. You can play whatever you want when you want to.
On Spotify.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it used to be that you could do that for free on your computer. You just couldn't do it for free on your phone, and you had to pay for the premium on your phone. I'm looking at their plans now, and they just talk about individual plans, listen to music ad-free. So it's possible that you could listen for free on even music and choose your own music, but then you'd have to wait for an ad to go through.
Okay.
So that would be the interest. You should sign up. Sign up and don't pay.
Okay.
Then listen to our podcast and see if it has an ad built into it in order to make it go out to people for free.
Okay.
Because I have a plan. I've had a plan.
Well, that was the thing. You've already listened to it through your TV set, but of course you're already a fully signed up Spotify subscriber.
Whatever the heck, yeah.
Yeah. So anything else on Spotify?
I don't think so.
Okay. And then that's good.
The one other article that came up was, one of the things is, of course, this was pre-COVID. And, you know, podcast listening has really totally changed, they say. Not necessarily for the negative, but like before, the standard thing was to listen on your drive. And like, so Spotify says, hey, listen, you know, obviously tons of people have dropped it as their drive time listen, but lots more people are listening at home while they're, you know, cooking and they're doing all the things that we start doing more of at home.
I've said this to you.
Maybe that explains why our numbers are up.
Yeah, we've talked about this on the show over the last 8, 9, however many months it's been since we've all been locked in our homes, that our numbers are better than they've ever been before. And I can go back in and there is a noticeable
spike. We haven't even done a Muppet show in a while. Maybe we need to put another Muppet show and really put us over the top.
Yeah. Remember, I think that's the leader. The James Bond special is up there. And then obviously the Trump prediction, anything with Trump in the title, yeah, has really good ratings. So yeah, there you go.
Hopefully we don't get kicked off of Twitter by having a Trump prediction special. So
if we don't get kicked off Twitter and we don't get invaded here in our separate basement studios.
Right.
But yeah, our numbers have definitely got bigger since lockdown. And again, look, it's anecdotal. We are an extremely small slice of the podcast world. But that being said, to your point, I think there's something to that. But I also think, I would say this too, I definitely have noticed in the last 2 to 3 years that other media are focusing on podcasts. Podcasts was very much sort of almost like an insider thing. Hey, do you listen to podcasts? Whereas podcasting, I think in general, has become more mainstream in that entertainment reviewers who never gave it a second thought, probably now are spending more time and energy like, hey, readers, you should check out these podcasts. Or, hey, George Clooney's got a new podcast. Do you know what I mean? So podcasting now has been, you know, I think it's something to do with arguably the demise of radio, but podcasting is sort of now sort of, it's got this sort of a greater sense of, hey, it's not just dudes in their basement studio dumping out content.
Right.
Even though ultimately it is.
Well, speaking of podcasts, I think this means the next segue, because I have to go get dinner in 20 minutes. So.
Okay.
the next segue was to your to New Year's resolutions. And because we've been talking about podcasts, I think we'll put it in your court.
Ryan,
to start,
we'll go there first. So my resolution last year, I'm going to talk quickly and then I'll talk about this year. My resolution last year was to get more involved in written content that we could put out on the podcast. And I'd said around this time last year that I'd met with a gentleman who'd written a thriller. And I'd offered to adapt it and make it a podcast serial in the way that our own production of When in Foam exists. And I remember adapting the first 40 pages of his book for him and sending it to him. And his wife told me she thought it was great, and then I never heard back from him. So I felt at that moment that, fair's fair, that he felt like I had not reflected his original intent in my writing. So I'd gone back, and to be honest with you, I have spent a lot of time in lockdown. I have 2 episodes of When in Foam almost finished.
There's a sequel? I had no idea.
Yes, there's a Christmas special, but the Christmas special was still like 10% short. And there was a part of me in September thinking,
you haven't called upon me to play any roles.
Well, no, because we haven't done it yet.
You're just writing.
Yes, so I'd written it, but it was 10% short. And I'm like, I'd really wanted to do it and put it up for Christmas. But I'm like, you know something, unlike Joe Rogan, we don't make any money off our podcast.
Yeah.
So if I'm not happy with it, I'm not going to sling it out there. So we'll be ready in the future.
You're in it for the art, not the money.
Right. So I do have a Christmas special almost finished, and then 2 other episodes. There's one where the family go on vacation. So they're sort of vaguely themed episodes. And my plan is to do them later this year. But also I'm like, well, you know, we're on Spotify and we have the blog. My resolution this year is to work real hard to promote our stream, because now we have all kinds of other stuff that can go on it. And we have hours of content that are now up there. But also, you know, without getting too sort of techno-geeky about this, basically when you have a podcast, you sort of pay for channels. And I own... or the Atlantic Voice blog, we're currently paying rent on like 4 different channels. I have content on 3 of them, and I have a 4th. I'm thinking, before I let the monthly rental go on this, why don't I rebadge this? And so I'm going to rebadge it as sort of my plan is to, I don't have a name, but sort of like almost a pilot network, and maybe get people involved in podcasting saying, look, do you have an idea? Then I'll put it up on the Atlantic Voice for you. And then if you take off, you do your own thing. Because there's loads of people who say, yeah, I want to do a show. And then they, you know, they show up and they do one, and then they never follow up. And you're like, why am I bothering? Do you know what I mean? It's too much hassle to give everyone a single show. But if
are you going to loan them equipment and do production for them?
Yes. So for example, before we recorded today, I'd met with a young man, a college freshman who writes like plays. And so I'd said to him, I'd read one, I'd said to him, I said, how would you like to adapt this for the radio, so to speak? So he got some people in, he's recorded it, and now I'm working with him on the sound effects, just like, so it'll be like When in Foam. And, you know, I would imagine by the end of the month, we'll be ready to put it up on the AtlanticVoice.net, just on the blog. And Here you go, dude. Send it to all your buddies. You are now out there. And if, you know, he decides to do something else, well, great. But what I'm also doing is I'm lining up some other people to do like one-off shows of whatever they think. But mm-hmm. But creatively, it's their thing, not mine.
Sure.
Do you see what I'm saying? And yeah. So I want to give a shout out. We're shouting out lots of people who listen to our show. I had a long conversation with our podcast feud, Pieces of Grit. Remember that podcast?
Yeah.
And so I had a long conversation with her this week, and I said, hey, do you have anything that you want to do beyond Pieces of Grit? Maybe we could do it together or whatever. So she is coming up with an idea. Anyway, in talking about, I was very complimentary about Pieces of Grit and, you know, the website looks great, much better than ours, blah, 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 yeah. blah, blah.
Why don't you make that your resolution?
No, hold on. I'm going to get to that. Anyway, in our conversation, you know, she slipped out that she gets about 100 listeners an episode. And so I felt, without saying it, I felt kind of good that we had better numbers than her.
Maybe you weren't supposed to say that on our podcast.
But also, the very same stepdaughter that put us on Spotify, she is also now redoing our logo. She saw the logo on my phone, because I have it as my screensaver on my phone, mm-hmm. and she's like, yeah, that logo needs some work. Now, I got very defensive about the logo. I want to give a shout out to Riley and Megan, who first designed that logo all those years ago. But my stepdaughter is now going to update it.
To be clear, Riley and Megan did a drawing, which was then scanned in, and then yours truly, this guy here, spent a ton of time changing all the color blocks to be work on a computer because, like, you know, when you scan something in, the reds are like 18 different shades of red. And so what I did is I converted it to just the four colors that are in there so it would work as a regular logo.
I understand what you're saying. Tell your interloper.
And that's fine. I mean, like, listen, we talked before about how – but I kind of like –
Have you ever been to the Sistine Chapel?
It annoyed me. I thought it was fine when we started, and then it started to bother me because it was sort of clearly hand-drawn and stuff like that. But now, recently, it's now regrown on me in the sense that every other little logo out there looks the same, and ours has this sort of – you hand-drew it, you know? You know, it just is sort of like – it's like a retro thing, like an album cover.
I did say to my stepdaughter – okay, have at it, but it better look good in a thumbnail. That's what I said to her.
What I don't want it to do is just look like everything else in the world, yeah. And just it looks like a Apple logo, you know, an Apple icon on your phone, you know, you know, what say like an app icon. I don't want that. Like,
so she's gonna.
It should be a little bit goofy. I mean,
she's
this
gonna
is a little
submit
bit
something, yeah. And then right. We'll have to pass judgment on it.
I mean, I have great faith in her judgment and artistic abilities, but, you know.
Well, I must confess,
self out there.
I wanted to change the subject after she brought it up because her and her sister were sitting there. And then, remember, they were both in When in Foam. They then hit me up with, we never got paid for being in your stupid show. And I'm like, ooh, let me clean the dishes. And so I didn't want to get involved having to owe people money. So,
yeah.
So anyway, well, that's my resolution
But I didn't think we were entitled to anything.
My resolution is to continue to upgrade the blog and really do some things and put content out there. Because again, I want to be entirely
as
honest.
As usual, your resolution is this sort of smushy kind of do some stuff. Right. You know, like it doesn't have a fixed, like, when will you know you achieve that or not?
When the stuff goes up there. We're going to be releasing something at the end of the month. And I'm going to say this now in all seriousness. When the only problem with the stream, if you go to AtlanticVoice.net and go down to the bottom of the page, on the bottom right hand corner, there's something that's called the Atlantic Voice Stream. You can click on that and listen to my partner and I 24/7. The only problem with that is, if you get tired of listening to you or I, we have nothing to keep you there. So what I want to try and do is get some more content that doesn't have your voice or mine so that people might go to the stream.
Well,
because who's
going
to go,
for another
what do
day?
I want
like,
to listen to these comedians?
I don't know
again.
How many people listen to the stream, but I, you know, the whole point of the whole point of a podcast is that you control things like what do I want to listen to, when I want to listen to it. And so if you put it in a stream with 8 years of stuff that you're just going to stumble into, like, you know, occasionally we're a little off our game. I'm not sure the stream is the focus, but I do think, you know,
it's my focus.
It out,
it's my resolution. Don't tell me what I need to do with my resolution. If my resolution is to commit to the stream.
I'm just talking about our
oh, okay.
Our network here, so to speak.
All right.
Anyway, I still don't know what your actual resolution is other than to do more of this stuff. But,
yeah, but when more stuff's done, you're going to go, oh, wow, Zeph yeah, really delivered like on his resolution.
More could be a small amount. So, like, you know, my resolutions okay. have specific goals. So let's talk about
about yours because I'm getting very defensive.
I know.
Joe Rogan doesn't do anything else. He just sits
there. My resolution last year to be an objective and measurable resolution was to row 1,000,000 meters. On the ERG machine that, you know, we got the concept to through the help of other
some contacts of mine,
and
things.
And so I managed
shout
to hit
out
that.
To Gretchen.
I specifically hit 1,010,194. You know, it looked a little dicey going into the holidays, but thankfully I had a good amount of time to finish it out.
So that's 1,000,000 meters.
Yeah, 1,000,000 meters, which is basically.
What is that?
627 miles.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So like, yeah,
okay.
That's impressive. Why I was asking before about the 600 miles and trying to think of what 600 miles are like. And for those of us around here, Chicago's about 700 miles away. You know, New York's only, I think, maybe only 200. Yeah, yeah, it's hardly anything. So that's not a good measurement. But, and Miami's too far. It's 1,000 miles away from DC area. So call it a trip to Chicago if there happened to be a river that you could row on the whole way.
You rowed 600 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying it that way because I remember when we'd said this and we'd had this conversation is for me as a person, like 1,000,000 meters sounds a lot. And yet I just couldn't conceptualize it.
Yeah. Well,
and I just mean, honestly, what's 1,000,000 meters? I don't know. But now you go.
A discussion with the other member of the household who said that, you know, you really should have come up with it. And I hadn't done it before. So it's all in retrospect. So I had,
managed to get 600 miles.
And that was actually with me having a shoulder problem partway through the year, which was not really interfering with the rowing, but it made me afraid I had ruined my shoulder from the rowing. It turns out, no, that was not the case. It was almost coincidental. And so I had a period there in the middle of the year where I really ratcheted back and I thought I was going to have to abandon the whole thing because I was worried that I was doing damage to my shoulder. And as it turns out, nope. And I was able to pick
up. You would have had to have abandoned ship.
So for the new year, I was thinking of, I wanted to do another exercise one, but I didn't want to do the exact same thing. You know, like I did the push-ups one, which I can't remember the number of push-ups last 10, time.
10,000 push-ups.
10,000. Okay. So I wanted to do one that was going to be a blend, almost like a triathlon of things of like biking, running, and rowing.
Okay.
But it got really hard to translate them. Like it was going to be really nice if it worked out that like rowing, the amount of calories you burned and, you know, how much effort it took was semi-equivalent as a distance thing. So I could turn it into a distance where you could like pick and choose whether to run some. But it didn't really work that way. The math was getting really too hairy. So I ended up abandoning that plan entirely. Then I thought about one that was going to be to have a salad every week for, you know, like of some, like as a dinner salad once a week for the whole year. I'm probably still going to try to do that, but I'm not going to make that into my resolution kind of thing.
No, and to be fair, we've both done food resolutions and we just seem to struggle with them. I remember the first year you were going to eat more Mexican food and you had like one taco. And then one year,
fajitas. Yeah.
And one year, I was going to eat more exotic food, and I basically had like a Thai sandwich.
Yeah, no,
that was it. So,
but I mean, one of the things about those things is they made for fodder for a like because when we did that, like when we did the more fajitas or the more bourbon one, we then had fajitas and bourbon and things like that at the podcast. So the thing is, with this is what we realized: like rowing, not helpful. Brewing beer. We did the brewing beer
one. Yeah, that was a good one. I enjoyed that.
So you could make beer. So again,
and the bourbon one I really enjoyed because I don't drink that stuff and I didn't know anything about it.
Yeah, so like the thing, so I've changed routes entirely. We recently got into Cali. You know, there's a lot of online education these days. There's like Coursera, the Great Course is one company that does a lot of and I mean, like they do academic stuff. It's, you know, professors and they do it both through schools, but also you can sign up for them.
So you're not doing fitness?
Not as a resolution.
I mean, okay, that's good because you just hammered me for having sort of this squishy, like, yeah, just doing stuff for the blog. And yet you were going to come back with 3 years in a row of basically staying fit. And while impressive as these feats are, that's all it is, isn't it?
Yes, but at least it's measurable and I can say to you. But it's also bad. It's bad for podcasting follow-up kind of thing. And we always need content. So we recently got the Great Courses is like an online education thing that's actually been around for a long time. They still offer DVDs of these things instead, like for somebody somewhere is paying and you have to pay like more for DVDs than streaming it. But I'm going to do 3 online courses this year.
Okay.
And it helps that they're having a sale that, like, these courses that are normally like $300 are now only $35. And so I haven't definitively decided which ones I'm going to do, but like each of them is basically either 24 or 36 sessions, each about a half an hour. So
okay, that's not too
material
bad.
Dedication.
Okay.
Of time.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not just, oh, I'm going to show up and watch some stuff on TV, but I'm definitely going to do how to draw. I'm going to do it like a thing on drawing, you know, like artistic drawing. I looked at guitar and then I was like, no, I can't do drawing and guitar and try to figure out how to do these things at the same time. It won't work. Maybe photography. There's a photography one. That one's only 24 sessions. And I might, there was a singing one, but I decided I'm going to save the singing one.
Yeah, let's save that. There's enough singing in the clips.
I think the other ones might be like more history. There's one on like Celtic history, and then there's one on like the history of warfare.
Yeah, I like all of that.
And then each of these I figure would be good for, like, you know, when we come back, I'll have some more information that I can expound on in the podcast.
And no, that's quite exciting.
Yeah.
So it's a combination of self-improvement and entertainment. Exactly. And remember, if
which was what, you know, that was always the goals before, was fajitas and things like that. Yeah.
And if you do drawings,
from it.
If you do draw, and that's one of those things I wish I'd spend more time. I think all of us, when we're little and you first go to art class and you do something good and then you think, oh, I've got a knack for this, and then you let it go. That is one thing that I wish I'd sort of kept doing. And I know all these people find like painting and stuff. Like my mum paints and sketches now.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I'm thinking, yeah, you know.
I mean, the little blurb about the drawing seems to suggest, you know, it's not something you're born with. You can learn to do these things completely, and it's a training thing. And so I don't know if that's true. I mean, it's obviously.
No, I saw an episode of The Americans where the cancer patient teaches what's her face how to draw. And she gives us some tips. And I remember sitting there thinking, oh, that makes perfect sense. And then I need to start
Jerry
doing
Russell
that. Yeah, she's. I can't remember what the plot line is, but she's undercover. I think they're trying to do something with the dude. And the dude's wife is bedridden with cancer. So she is disguised as like an in-home carer. But anyway, the lady, the wife is a, she's a, like an art instructor. Yeah. And she gives Kerry Russell some tips. And I'm thinking, oh, those tips sound pretty good. But anyway, what I was going to say was.
So we'll see if that's true. So
what I'm saying was that we can have an exhibition of your work and then put it up on YouTube.
Right.
And then via the show, because we do have a YouTube channel. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Have it just rotate through the blog. Just pictures. Art.
I mean, the singing would really be better for the podcast, but it's a little bit more.
Well, let's make that judgment when we hear our people sing.
We could have a singing competition, like invite, you know, friends of the pod on to all sing a song.
That might be a good idea.
It'd be better post-COVID. We don't all want to
I don't want people's stuff flying around.
Have you thought about that with your, like, using other people, using your microphones? Are you using your gear?
We have a strict mask policy, and then I have everyone separated. So I bought some extra long cables.
Yeah, but by definition, their podcasts are going to sound poorly because they're talking through a mask.
No, I'm surprised that they're not, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It was very good. You got up close with the mics. Okay. What was I going to say? There was a point I was going to make, and it's completely gone. So I'm
sorry.
Something to do with, oh no, I did have an idea for the show. For one show, we're going to do at some moment. So, and this is tied back to us getting on Spotify. So my stepdaughter's on the computer and she first says to me, you know, are you on Spotify? And I'm like, because I thought we were. But here's where I was confused. When in Foam is on Spotify, but for some reason we'd never got around to putting the mothership up there. So I'm like, yeah, just type it in. So she's typing it in. And all these other shows with Atlantic in the title come up. And she's like, none of these are you guys. And I'm like, oh, we can't be on Spotify. And then I sat and I thought, you know something? We need to evaluate other podcast Atlantics and review their shows.
Well, there's that one that's...
the Canadian one that actually is Atlantic Voice.
Yeah.
But again, we beat them to the point. We're older than them. So come on down, Canada. Yeah. We'll get involved in a lawsuit. Come on down.
We would win. I'm sure
we would win. We were first. They've only been around since 24. They stole our name, inadvertently, perhaps. But you know something? Yeah. They can explain that to the judge. But I thought we should evaluate other Atlantic podcasts.
Sounds good. Well, it's time for me to go get dinner.
All right.
It's not a salad.
No, you know, not a salad.
I have to build in there.
All right, so there are resolutions. Jerry and the Pacemaker, Michael Apted, the movie director. What I recommended, the book, The Soccer Tribe. But also, it's been playing on my cable provider. Get a chance, watch Coal Miner's Daughter. Great movie.
Yeah.
This has been Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for the Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.